That's probably better. Good morning, church.
Good morning.
Sorry about that. I was just like so into the song service, and I was just kind of sitting there and waiting for the next song. I apologize for that. It was really good this morning. Oh, man, it is so good to be with you again this morning. I'll tell you, it has been a hectic week. For me and my family, we're still in the process, the transition process. So I was commuting back and forth to Nashville a lot this week. I drove back and forth more times than I'd anticipated, but it was still a good week. We're getting used to the transition schedule, and this week will be a little more normal for us, hopefully. But we're here this morning. We're glad to be together as a family this morning. We've been kind of like two ships passing in the night for the last few days, but it's good to be together, and it's good to be with you all. I want you to know that one of the first things that I'm trying to do as a minister here with Forest Mill is trying to get to know you. And some of you are thinking, "Oh, he's not doing a very good job of getting to know me. He can't remember my name." And you're right. I'm not. I'm really bad at that. I'm really, really trying. But I'm getting some of you down, and then I'll forget next week. But I'm getting there. But I want to get to know you better than just your name and kind of where you sit on Sunday mornings. I'd like to get to know you like on a more personal level. So we've been kind of going through the Bible classes. We're going to be in every Bible class before it's all said and done. On Sunday mornings, on Wednesday nights, I will eventually be in every class. This morning, last Sunday morning, we were in the cradle roll, which was fantastic. And this morning, we got to be in the kind of the toddler room, the 2 to 4, and that is exciting. I am here to tell you that group is exciting. They are maybe the most exciting bunch out of all the classes. If you have not run around your Sunday school room with a lion, you've not had the big fun. You know, so this morning we had a great time in there with the 2 to 4-year-olds and getting to know them. I also want to get to know you, get to know your family. Whenever it's possible, and I know that, you know, our schedules may not completely jive, but with visits, you know, maybe we go out for a coffee or go out to lunch, or maybe you bring me over for homemade fried chicken and apple pie. I don't know, whatever. Whatever, I mean, could be anything. I would love to do that, and I want to get to know you, and there's like no rush or anything like that, but I'm free Monday night. No, for real, I do want to get to know you and spend some time with you. And so I know it's going to take some time. It'll take weeks, months, and maybe even years before we're able to get all the personal interaction kind of down and probably never be exactly to my liking. But we're going to get there eventually. And so this morning I want to do this little exercise to sort of get us jump-started to begin this getting to know you process. I would like to have, and this sounds so dangerous, I want all the kids elementary aged and down to come on up here. And parents, if you have babies and you want to bring them up here, that's great. If you have toddlers and you just want to let them go, that's fine. Or if you want to hang on to them and keep them on a leash like there, that's fine too. All kids elementary aged and down, elementary school aged and down, y'all come on up here. And tell you what, y'all just sit on the stage. Just have a seat up here. Just sit around these steps. Y'all come sit on the steps. That's great. Oh, this is great. Man, this is like so much better than looking at me. Right? Look at all you guys. You are fantastic. Yes, you are fantastic. Going to Tebow. All right, here we go. You guys. Oh, yeah. You want to sit down? There you go. We got it. Oh, good job. That's Aniston, right? Good morning, Miss Aniston. All right. Y'all don't know Aniston. I know Aniston because I was in the 2 to 4-year-old class this morning. Anyway, you guys know what all these people who are gathered here this morning are, right? They are a what? Your name's Lane. Well, fantastic. Wasn't exactly the answer I was looking for. What would you call all these people who are gathered here together this morning? What would you call them? Yes. A group? Yeah. What kind of group is this?
Church.
A church, that's right. These people are all the church. So let me ask you a question. What does a church do? What does this group, what does this church do? Yes. They worship God and Jesus. That's right. Very good. That's one of the things we do is we worship. What else does a church do? Yes. They race. We do a lot of racing here. Time out. You're still it. Okay. What else does a church do besides worship God and Jesus? Do you guys know? Yes. What does the church do?
Work.
They work. That's very good. The church also works. What were you going to say?
They help others.
Oh, they help others. All these are really good answers. So let me ask you. If a church does all these things, worship and help people and work, if a church does all those things, what is your role in the church? Do you know? What's your job here, do you think?
Fine.
Just be cute?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. What do you think your job here is?
To learn and listen.
To learn and listen. Oh, that's a really good one. What else?
Learn about God.
You guys, let me tell you, and you guys all have fantastic answers. But one of your main jobs here, because you have a job too, just like all of these adults, you have a job. And I think one of your main jobs is to be our hope. Did you know that? Because everybody who's sitting out there is looking up here at all you, and if they have all this hope invested in you. If you're their parents or if they're your parents or grandparents, they're like, oh, I hope that they'll behave up there and not make me look bad. what they're saying is they are trying to pass on to you their love for God and Jesus and other people, their faith in the future, and they've invested in you all of this hope. So you've got your own hopes. What do you hope to be when you grow up? You may want to be a doctor, or you may want to be a farmer, or you may want to be a fireman, or you may want to be a paleontologist. You may want to be any one of those things. So you have all of your hopes.
A Ninja Turtle.
A Ninja Turtle, that's another excellent thing. Guys are so excited. But you also have all of their hopes too. So we're going to call you guys the Hope Group. Can I take a picture of y'all? Is that legal? Do I have to ask your parents?
No.
No, okay. All right, I'm going to do this right here. Hunter, get up there. All right, y'all ready for a picture? Okay, I'm going to do it on the count of three. One, two, three. Say cheese.
Cheese.
Got it. You guys can go back to your seats. And it is important for a church to have hope. It is important for a church to have this generation. It is important for them to have people in whom they've invested their faith and their love and they're working on and they're building. That is really, really, if they're not the only important. We've got another group made up primarily of middle school aged kids on up through college age kids. And immediately I see panic in some of your eyes because you're thinking, I ain't sitting on that stage. I might run around the podium for a while, but I'm not sitting on the stage. No. You guys do not have to get up here. You don't have to sit on the stage or anything like that. But I do want you to do me a favor. I just want you to stand up where you are. If you are in middle school all the way through college age, just stand up where you are. And if you're college age, you're thinking, I do not want to be lumped in a group with middle school kids. This is fantastic. But let me tell you what you all have in common. Oh, there it is. You all have in common something that not many of the rest of us have. You see, you guys are in the process of figuring out yourselves, like who you are, and figuring out the world, like how the world works. And some of you are really early in that process, and some of you are later in that process, and you're getting really closer to that. But some of you are just beginning that process. And so because you're learning about all of this different stuff, you're learning about how friendships work and romance works, how society works. You're figuring out all of these things. And so because you're like relatively new to this process, you think differently than all these people who are sitting down. You think differently than all of us, and you come up with answers that like we would never imagine. You like blow our minds because you are so creative, you're so different, and so you represent, for the church, you represent the surprise. That's true, isn't it? Like, surprise, I got my nose pierced. Yeah. Right? You are the element of surprise because you think of stuff that is so far out, you can't even see the box from there. You're thinking of solutions to problems that we didn't even know were problems. You think in ways that are really important and really different. No, you got to stay standing up. Get back up there. Anyway, you come up with all these things. You use technology and resources that we didn't know existed, much less understand how they work. And so you're doing all of this. And sometimes those ideas that you come up with, they're going to like be shot down by adults or others of them. You're going to get to actually do, and they're going to come crashing down in flames. It's going to be absolutely terrible. But all that's good. That's good because it means that you're still learning and that like you're going to get better next time. But let me tell you, without you guys, without your surprise brains, then a church really quickly gets dry and stale.
Amen.
So we need you to like come crashing down in flames sometimes. We need you to come up with like crazy ideas that we think are completely stupid. Then you go and do them, and we're like, oh, that's brilliant. We need you to do that. So real quick, I'm going to take your picture too. You do not have to get up here. Just stay where you are. And this will be on the website. Just kidding. ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. I think I got it. All right, you guys can sit down. Y'all give them a hand. All right. Really important generation. Next comes this group of people that's made up of like the young adults, people who are, you know, early 20s, on through really retirement. And this is lumping, really, it's really lumping a couple of generations together. We're going to do it for the purposes of the sermon this morning. It is like moms and dads and workers and force. Some of you are even grandparents. It's like the early 20s all the way up to retirement. So if you are in that group, I want you to stand up really quickly. And I'll keep you guys brief because I know you're like tired. All right. So when people think of a church, you are the people they tend to think of first. Because you're not just the moms and the dads, but you like make stuff happen. Right? You are in a way we could call you the builders. Because you are building so many things. You're building your careers, you're building your families, you're building your nest egg for your retirement. You are building all sorts of things. Whether single or married or have kids, grandkids or no kids, or whether any of that, you are building something. And so you are make stuff work. You're like how stuff gets done in the church. So you are the ones who teach the Bible classes, generally speaking. You're the ones who teach the Bible classes, the ones who are passing out t-shirts at the Convoy for Hope. You're the ones who are running ministries. You're the ones who are like running yourself ragged between getting kids stuff done and getting work stuff done and getting community stuff done. You're the ones who are going all over the place. And if a church does not have you, then it quickly descends into molasses, like because nothing moves. People may have great ideas, but they don't have the ability to get them accomplished. And so even though you're busy and even all this other stuff going on, your role in this congregation is so vital. Just as the other two groups, you are every bit as important to them. So real quick, I'm going to take your picture and I'll let you sit back down and get back to your nap. Okay, ready? We go 1, 2, cheese. Yeah, if you didn't say cheese, you're not getting in here. All right, got it. Y'all can sit down. All right. Last group. And you guys were probably hoping I would overlook you, but I'm not doing it. This is our oldest group, and many of you have been Christians for like several decades, longer than some of these other generations have even been alive. You've been Christians, and you've seen all the vast changes in society. So if you are like retirement age and older, if you are above retirement age, if you haven't stood up yet, stand up if you can. I mean, I'm trying to make everybody. Good job, Morris. So glad y'all did that. So glad. You guys have weathered storms that we have only either heard about or seen on TV or read about in a book. You have been through things that none of us can really understand because you've had the benefit of life experience. And you may question whether or not it's a benefit sometimes, but it is to the rest of us because we need that. We need that experience. It is your generations that taught us what it means to be a father or a mother or a worker or a boss. You taught us what it means to be a member of society. You taught us what it means to be a Christian. And for that, we are deeply in your debt. So in a way, you represent the legacy of Forest Mill. Okay? You've lived long enough that you've started seeing some of the fruits of your labors come about. So the students that you taught are now teachers. The kids that you raised are now parents. The people that you employed are now employers. Like, you've gotten to see that, and that's pretty fantastic because you have passed that on. You've done it. You've done a great job in doing that. And even though society may tell you, yes, thanks for doing that, and now your time is done, we're not going to tell you that because we still need you, like, actively. We need what you have done, but we also need what you can do, because when you act or speak or do something in faith, then that trickles down to every one of us. Like, you are the, like, trickle down economics. You're the rich people in here. And I don't mean that like economically. I mean that like faith wise. And so whenever you act, it affects everyone else. All right, that's really important, because I look out and I see a 70-year-old who is patting some ragged street kid on the head, and that changes me. Right? When I see someone who I know is living on a fixed income doing something in generosity, then that means something. Okay? So you guys, your role is really important here, and without your active presence in a church, then we quickly become a rudderless ship. We may be even doing things, but we don't have the direction that we need. So I'm really quick. I'm going to take your picture, and I'll let you sit back down. Here we go. 1, 2, cheese. All right, gotcha. You guys sit down. Y'all give him a hand again. So in this congregation, in this group, this assembled church this morning, we have all of these different distinctive groups. And you may say, well, you know, I don't exactly fit in the description you said of my group. And I know there were a lot of generalities, but we kind of tried to lump people in together because it's a lot more fun. You guys, though, are all in one group or another. Everybody that's birthed through wherever you are in life, everybody falls into a group. And so all that being said this morning, I want us to look at our scripture reading for the day. And this is kind of the text that our lesson is based on. It comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. And I hate to get into this very much, but let me explain it as you're getting there. If you're turning there in your Bibles, that's great. If you're not, you can read it up here in a sec. Paul writes in a style of writing that's called Greco-Roman rhetoric. And you and I probably didn't study rhetoric. Unless you are in the legacy group, you might have studied rhetoric. But most of the rest of us did not study rhetoric. Think of it as a style of arguing. Think of it like, okay, you probably learned to write an essay. Okay, and you learn in an essay, you write your opening paragraph, and in your opening paragraph, you have a thesis sentence. Then your next few paragraphs are explaining that thesis sentence. Then you wrap it up with a concluding paragraph. That's the way I learned how to write an essay. Greco-Roman Greco-Roman wrestling is really important too. Greco-Roman rhetoric. Greco-Roman rhetoric is sort of like that. It's a writing style used by people to persuade. All right, and it's the style that Paul uses throughout his letters, though you and I don't recognize it because we aren't used to that. But that's what he uses. And in this writing style, you have this an element of it that's called the propositio. It's where we get our word proposition. And it's like the thesis statement for the whole rest of the work. And in the book of 1 Corinthians, this is the one statement about which the whole rest of the book is working it out. Sort of like your thesis sentence in your essay. This is the thesis sentence for the entire rest of the book of 1 Corinthians. So it's really important. And this is what Paul says. He says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and in thought. You see, the church at Corinth, and if you've ever read the book of Corinthians, you know that church had a multitude of problems. They had immorality. They had selfishness. They had greed. They had improper use of spiritual gifts. They had rich people looking down on poor people. They had all sorts of things that were going on. People were getting drunk at the Lord's Supper. You're like, man, they were not using that grape juice. I don't care how much you drink of that grape juice, you're not getting drunk. But they were getting drunk at the Lord's Supper. You talk about a church with problems. I dare say we wouldn't even call them a church. If there was a church in Coffee County that served enough alcohol with their Lord's Supper that some people could get drunk, what would the rest of us say? Would we say that was a church? I'd be hard-pressed to say that too. Paul calls them a church. They have got a multitude of problems, but none of those things are the real problem. The real problem, Paul says, is that all of these little problems were threatening to divide them up. Like all of the little problems were threatening to divide them up, to segregate them, to separate them into smaller groups. It was creating this great divide between Christians. Sort of like what I just did. Divisions between Christians. You group of Christians are like this. You group of Christians are like that. My group of Christians is like that. And y'all group of Christians is like that. And we can divide people up in any number of ways, the same way that society does. Society divides us up by age too. Like you go to school with people who are your same age, right? Or really close to it. You work with people. Generally, you end up working with people who are about your same age. So you work with a group of young adults if you're a young adult. And you generally work with more people who are older adults when you're an older adult. You retire with people who are around retirement age because you're a retirement adult. I mean, people get grouped in, and adults stay with adults, and kids stay with kids, and it gets like Lord of Flies style on the playground. Right? We get lumped in by age in society. We also get lumped in by income. Wealthy people stay together with wealthy people and do wealthy people things. Poor people stay together with poor people and do poor people things. Right? The rich people generally stay together and empower, and poor people generally stay together and get overlooked. That's the way it works in society. We get lumped together by race. Dr. Martin Luther King once said that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in America. Look around. Yep. Right? We get lumped together by sex. Men generally stay together and make all the men decisions, and women stay all together and badmouth the men decisions. Not without just cause. Right? We get divided into a dozen other ways. We get divided up politically, you know, like liberal and conservative. We get divided up educated, the know-it-alls and the not-know-it-alls. We get divided up, it's all these different ways. We get divided up regionally. We got Yankees and rednecks and Californians. And I mean, we get divided up even within the region, Tennesseans versus Alabamans and poor Arkansas people. I mean, it is I. Sorry. Anyway. So there are all these ways that society divides us. But the division in the Corinthian church seemed to largely be on the basis of wealth and power. And in their society, wealth was power, but it wasn't the only power. Influence. Like you could have influence if you weren't wealthy, but if you were wealthy, you had influence. So that was a cultural thing that was going on there. You wanted to be well known. So if you go through and they've uncovered all these ruins of Corinth, and everywhere you go, it almost looks like graffiti because there are people's names everywhere. These steps were paid for by so-and-so. This fountain was paid for by so-and-so. These paving stones were put down by so-and-so under the leadership of so-and-so. I mean, people's names are everywhere. Why? You wanted to be well-known. It was like almost like miniature famous. But you wanted to be known for having this generosity and benefiting society. And so that was the big deal, to be wealthy, to be at power. And in their culture, the people who had the power, the people who were wealthy, the people who had the influence, if you were to go to a meal, those people, the wealthy people, would get served one kind of food in one room. Like you go to this meal, and if you had the wealth, you had the power, you got served one kind of meal in this room. If you were poor or if you were a slave, then you got served another kind of food, namely the leftovers, over here out of the way, sometimes in the little courtyard area, the atrium. So is it any wonder that in the Corinthian celebration of the Lord's Supper, you see rich people going first and getting all the food and all the drink, and the poor people coming last and not getting any? It's just exactly the way their culture did it. Their culture influenced their behavior in the church. And this is like not the only instance of the culture influencing church behavior, right? Making cultural divisions where there ought to be church unity. Culture does that all the time. Even today, we see black churches, white churches, Hispanic churches, and Asian churches, right? We see churches that are rich. We see churches that are poor. We see churches that are full of younger people and a lot more churches that are largely full of older people. We see churches that are every bit as segregated as society would do if they had their say, which apparently they do have their say. And all of this, I would argue, is a big and very real problem for Christians in our culture, because we're behaving no differently than the rest of the world. Like if you were on the outside looking in, you couldn't tell the difference between the way we treat one another and the way we treat other people out there, and between the world, the way the world treats one another and the way they treat people out there. They give deference to people who have the influence and the power and the money, and then they really don't care about those who don't. And boy, sometimes it looks a lot that way in churches. I mean, maybe poor people are good for a handout and make you feel good about doing something, but they don't really get a voice. And maybe women are really valued in some societal ways that I think are not very healthy, but they aren't really listened to in the same way you'd listen to a man. And maybe black people are encouraged for their cultural diversity and just doing something different, but for having an equal voice of power, oftentimes they're overlooked. Right? And it finds that same attitude finds its way into the church. So the real question is this morning is not, is this a problem? Because it is. I'm telling you right now it is. This is a great congregation. This is, by the way, somebody told me they were going to wear steel-toed boots, and I said, that's fantastic, because I'm wearing steel-heeled boots this morning myself. And I'm coming down on my own toes every bit as hard as yours. This is not an indictment on Forrest Mill. I did not look out at Forrest Mill and say, aha, I've caught you. This is broader spectrum, but I think it has some personal application, okay? So the real question is it a problem that we're divided up? The real question is, what do we do about the problem that we are divided? What can we do about it? And in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul starts really grappling with this, and I believe he points us in the right direction. Beginning at verse 12, 1 Corinthians 12, beginning at verse 12. And if you have time, go back and read this whole chapter. But this is really good. Paul says, just as a body, though one, has many parts, but all of its many parts form one body. So it is with Christ. For we were all baptized into one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles or slave or free. We were all given one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but many. So Paul points us in the right direction. Paul starts giving us hints here with his use of body language. Language that I believe indicates how we can reconcile our divisions. You see, the problem is not, and this is what I long thought the problem was, is that not everybody thought like me. And so, look, when I was like that, and I grew up in a kind of church that, like, if you did not use the right translation, you were in trouble. And if you did not dress a certain way, then you might be looked down on. And if you weren't dressed a certain way, you certainly couldn't wait on the Lord's table. And if you did not have certain set of beliefs, and if you don't, then you would not be accepted. I mean, that was just the way I've raised, and I've still got friends and family who think that way, and I love them, and they're Christians, and I'm not disputing their faith or their authenticity at all. I'm not questioning that in the least. But it led me to be really divisive. My problem was that every Christian I came in contact with, I had to decide whether they were in or out, because that was my job. And now, nobody told me this was my job. Nobody said this is what you got to do. But that's what I ended up doing, because I thought I had to decide who was in, who was out. And I became really divisive. Consequently, there were only four Christians in my entire grade. I went to school. I had 130 people in my age. There were only four Christians in my mind. Now, God might have had a different idea about that, but that was my idea. There were only four, and I wasn't so sure about two of those. You know? So, the real problem is not that we're not all the same. You know what? Of course we're not the same. Oh my goodness. If I were at a church full of 40-year-old preachers, I would go nuts. Drive myself crazy. I don't want to be in a church that's full of people who look and think and act just like me. Do I want some of those? Yes, because we got to tell everybody else what's right. But we don't all need to be like me. The problem in Corinth is not that not everybody is the same. Of course it's not the same. Guess what? God designed it on purpose so that we are not the same. You know what? If God had wanted everybody to be the same sex, He could have done that. I mean, we could have recreated just like trees. I mean, just, you didn't have to have male and female. You just got, you know, pollen flying around. We could have done that. He made us on purpose to be like really different thinking. For men to be really logical and women to be really right anyway. God did that on purpose. And God made some of us to be like really dark, like people who have a different kind of hair and different color skin and everything, and made some people like me to, like, you know, flash burn if I go outside and it's over 70. That's just the way He did it. He did it on purpose. You know, it's amazing to me that if God wanted everybody to look and think and dress alike, that He could have made people that did that. And He didn't. So if God wanted a group of people to represent Him, very well could have said in the New Testament or in the Old Testament or anywhere, all right, now everybody dress like this, everybody think like this, everybody talk like this, everybody walk this way and talk this way. And just like Aerosmith said, hey, you know, He could have done that, but He didn't. Instead, God said, yeah, here, y'all be united around this idea right here. But how you carry that out, it's going to look really different. It was so different in Antioch that the people in Jerusalem came up and said, whoa, you guys are not Christians. That's what happens in Acts 15. When the Jerusalem Christians made their way to Antioch, they looked around, they were like, you guys are doing this so different. You're not really Christians. And so we're like wondering, maybe we're not Christians. I don't know. Maybe we have to do it just like the people in Jerusalem. And the Jerusalem council finally said, no, don't. Y'all are Christians, don't worry about it. So we don't have to all be the same. In fact, Paul makes the point here that God makes us really different on purpose, that he wants people who are creative. He wants the kids of hope. He wants the young people of surprise. He wants the builders. He wants the legacy. And he wanted every bit of that to all be together. Like, he wanted rich people and poor people and men and women and liberal and conservative and black and white and tan. He wanted every bit of that, all the colors of the rainbow, wanted them to all be together because that's how you make a body. I mean, that's another illustration here. The illustration is not, hey, hands don't get too far away from the mouth or feet don't get too far away from the eyes. That's not what he's saying there with this analogy. What he's saying is, look how different my hands and my feet are from my eyeballs. And yet, you know what? I need them all. I need something that works really differently over here than something here. I need something that works really differently at the end of my legs than what's going on here. I need all of that, and yet they can all work together because they're all being operated in coordination. My wife would argue whether or not I'm coordinated, but all being operated in coordination by one spirit. Because there's like one person inside of me that operates the hands and the feet and the mouth and the eyes. They can all work together. And that's the way the church is supposed to work. You're not supposed to have the mind, this brilliant spirit, operating 50 mouths at the same time. Like, some of you are mouths. And that's, I've met you already. And I love you because I'm a mouth too. I get that. And I am so thankful that you are here. But we don't need everybody like us. Otherwise, people wouldn't listen to us, right? Some of you are the ears, and I probably have not met you yet. Because you're not the first to come up and introduce and get all in the way. But boy, do we need you as a sounding board. And some of you are the feet, and you're ready to go, 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 go. Some of you are the brain, and you're thinking, no, 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 no. Right? We've got all of these different parts. They need to all work together. And here's the great thing about this. It's a little bit of a history for you. This body metaphor does not resonate with Paul. Like, this metaphor has a long and storied history. But probably the most applicable is that it was used in Roman society. Marcus Agrippa, which you probably know him, went to high school with him. He was this Roman statesman, and he was also a general, thanks. He was a Roman statesman in general. He was a philosopher. He was really well respected. I mean, a lot of his quotes live on. So he made this analogy about Greco-Roman society. Now, Greek was the culture. It was like the way the people were raised. Roman was the empire. Once Rome conquered the Grecian empire, like, they're in charge. So it becomes Greco-Roman society. You've got elements of Greece and elements of Rome all together. And so the thing about Roman culture, the thing about Roman society, about the empires, they needed everybody to stick together. But there was this one time that this group, they were called the plebeians. Now, the plebeians were the underclass in Roman society. They did a census. I mean, Romans were big on censuses, right? Yeah, we get that. Jesus, birth of Jesus, right? They were doing census then. And what they would do is they would count everybody, but you got put into one of two categories. Either plebeians, which is the have-nots, which is why you call freshmen plebes when they're pledging. Like at a fraternity or sorority, you call them plebes. The plebeians. And then you got the people who are in power. The authoritarians. They're the patricians. So Marcus Agrippa argues when the plebeians are in rebellion because they're feeling like they're getting overlooked, and they are. And he says, don't you know, to the plebeians, to the poor people, don't you know that we're all part of one body, this society, this Roman Empire, we're all part of one body, and that you need to submit to the authority of the patricians to keep this body together? So here's the interesting thing about 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Is that Paul uses the exact same argument in the exact opposite direction. Now hang on with me, church. He uses it in the exact opposite direction. He calls for the strong to give more honor to the weak. He says for the strong to cease their divisive ways. He doesn't get on to the poor people and say, hey, y'all need to fall in line behind the wealthy and the powerful and the rich. He gets on to the wealthy and the powerful and the rich and says, no, you stop it. You start honoring those people over there. So, in other words, if you are in power, if you are one of the people in power, which in our culture, this is not everybody, but in our culture, historically, has tended to be wealthy, white men. That's generally who's in power in our culture. And yes, there are exceptions, and yes, not all men are wealthy, or not all men are white, and all this, we can go through that. But go to Congress and tell me how many wealthy, white men are sitting there. Right? Go look, pull all the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies, tell me how many wealthy, white men are running those companies. You go to churches around this country, tell me how many wealthy, white men are running the show. That's who's in power in our culture, right? Paul calls for those who are in power. He says it is your job to honor those who are completely different than you. Those who are younger, those who are poorer, those who are of a different skin tone or a different sex, it is your job to listen to them and to honor them because the body needs more than a mouth. He says, and go and finish reading the argument. We just didn't have time to go through it. But he says, you know, don't think, feel like you have to be a mouth. Mouth, you look after that foot. You need to honor that foot. So the idea here is both unity and diversity. Sometimes we just really stress the unity part of this, but Paul is arguing for unity in diversity. That yes, you all be together, but you better all be different too. Don't get here. Don't think you have to be a part of this church, that you have to conform. Unity and diversity is not just this lofty idea you need to kind of work towards. This is a necessity. If we are going to represent Christ to the rest of the world, it's a necessity. We need rich people and poor people, men and women, young and old, black and white and Hispanic and Asian. We need whatever our community is, we need to represent that community. And you're probably sitting there thinking, but I'm different, right? Maybe your job or your background or your family situation or your way of thinking, maybe you're thinking, I am just different than everybody else around here. You do not want me to go into beast mode. If I go full me, people are going to be shocked. And if that is the case, praise God. Because I'm telling you, we need you. That God will use you. Forrest Mill needs people who are not like Forrest Mill. If we're going to be what Forrest Mill needs to be. Does that make sense? God has brought you to be a part of this church for a very specific reason. And the reason is not, I'll give you a hint, the reason is not that so you'll be like everybody else. The reason I think, you know, if everybody was homogenous, if they were all the same, it wouldn't be a church at all. Your gifts and your talents were purchased by the blood of Jesus Christ every bit as surely as your sins were. Your gifts, your talents, your personality, your background, your thinking, your way of doing things, that was bought and purchased and covered by the blood of Jesus Christ and brought here for a reason so that they may demonstrate the glory of God, that they may work in harmony with the rest of the body and show the rest of the world that you don't have to be like a 40-year-old preacher that's white and you don't have to have a beautiful wife and two kids. You don't have to be like that to be a Christian. Your gifts and your talents were here and brought by God so that everybody else, this whole community, could see this God-given diverse gifts on display for His glory. And when that happens, when all of these weird, different, freaky, funny, strange people, when they all get together and they start doing things that make a difference, then the world will sit up and take notice. They'll wonder how rich people and poor people, old people and young people, liberal people and conservative people, black people, white people, men and women, they'll wonder, how can those people work together in such a beautiful way? How do those people, just 1% of our community, how do they work together and make a difference for all of the rest of us? They'll wonder that. But it's not going to be because we all have money or we're all brilliant in school or because we're all got it all down pat. This morning, if you, whether you are a Christian or not a Christian, whether you have given your life to Christ or not yet made that commitment, I want you to know that you are equally important in God's eyes and that Jesus died for you every bit as much as anybody else here. So, if you have not given your life to Christ, I mean, we certainly have the opportunity to do that today or sometime this week. We can sit down, you and me can sit down, we can study, we can do that. But this morning, I want you to make a decision that you are going to find ways to honor others this week. Like concrete, real, hard decisions. Maybe you have an extra tenner in your pocket when you're the line at McDonald's. And so you say, hey, just towards whoever comes behind me. Just do it. And when they look around for you, give them a smile and a wink and walk away. Oh gosh, they probably went to school with your sister, so they know who you are. Right? This week, if you're at the grocery store and you see somebody who's pushing out a big buggy of groceries, I don't care if they're younger, older, black or white or younger. I mean, just go up and say, hey, let me help you with that. If you've got the physical ability to do that, just do that. Just hold a door extra long. You know, just cover someone's shift. I don't know what you can do. I mean, God put you where you are. You know a lot more than me. Find ways to honor people that are different than you and do it on purpose. Like, don't just fall into it. Find ways, seek ways, look for ways that you can honor people that are different from you. So make that commitment this morning. If we can help you, if you need prayers, if you need encouragement, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?
A common love for each other, a common gift